News Radio 690 KTSM presents more of the El Paso History Show, featuring your host, documentary filmmaker Jackson Polk, and historian Melissa Sargent. We're live online at ktsmradio.com. Brought to you by ephistory.com, the website for archive podcasts of this radio show and DVDs about El Paso history and heritage. ephistory.com. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant and Cantina, making the old Griggs recipes in a new location at 6761 Donovan Drive. Sargent Home and Business Inventory Services, providing affordable photographic and digital inventories of your home, office, or collectibles. Call 915-581-7099. And by Monterey Asset Management for your real estate investments. And now, here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
All righty, we're going to start hour two of the El Paso History Show with an El Paso History Moment produced by Melissa Sargent for the El Paso History Alliance. And our History Moment today is about a famous old opera house in El Paso that was also a brothel, until it burned down.
Culture comes to the pass. December 15, 1887, the Meyer Opera House opened the decorative iron gates that led to the entrance of what was then considered one of the most beautiful buildings in El Paso. The Meyer had a stunningly ornate Romanesque exterior with an opulent interior showcasing an octagonal ceiling that rose to a dome with eight large panel paintings by a Chicago artist set into the ceiling. The opera house with chandeliers and stage lighting was lit by natural gas, and performers proclaimed the Meyer the best-lit stage in the West. The Meyer would be the place to perform along the theater circuit from New York to Los Angeles by the top performers of the day. Actor Edwin Booth, international opera star Sarah Bernhardt, actress Nellie Boyd, and the infamous Lily Langtry, the toast of Europe, and the subject of a long, one-sided love affair by hanging judge Roy Bean, to name a few. The Meyer Opera House would continue to play an important role, not only as a cultural center, but the hub of gossip with its checkered history, as the third floor of the building in its end days became the last brothel of the famous Madame Etta Clark. The Meyer Opera House would burn down November 15, 1905. More history next time on El Paso History Moments. I'm Melissa Sargent for the El Paso History Alliance.
This El Paso History Moment is brought to you by Sargent Home and Business Inventory Services. Go online to sargentinventoryservices.com.
Is that you and Bernie singing in the background?
Yeah, you like that? We're doing that was from, was it?
I can't remember now. As the building burned
down. I didn't get to share the really fun part of the end of that was during that fire during the brothel. There were many important individuals that were carrying furniture and women out of the windows down ladders with just their underwear on. And they kept telling the firemen that they had didn't want to get their clothes burnt, that they had taken them off, so they didn't want to ruin their clothes while helping these poor women out of this brothel upstairs.
Yeah, sure. Well, you do this for the History Alliance, and that's a good crowd on Facebook. They got big stuff going on.
Yes, they do. And give Bernie Sargent a call at 915-581-7920 to get involved. Or if you have questions or you've got information, give him a holler. And we cannot forget Barbara Given Bainey and her crew over there at Remember in El Paso Win, the Facebook page that knows it all.
Keeps on giving. It's archives. It's archive pictures and stories
and history, you name it. They've got it out there.
And another administrator that works with her is Ken Weese and W-E-E-S-E. And they got a whole bunch of people, and they're all volunteers.
Yeah.
So we just want to say their names when we get a chance.
You'd never get it from a paid employee like that.
Well, you may or may not, but we're not going to find out because they're all volunteers. We got another history moment, history hour here going on here with UTEP people. We're going to introduce you to Dr. Jeff Shepard. Good morning, Jeff. Welcome here. Sergio, turn on that microphone
over
there.
We'll never hear him.
Where is that microphone? Sergio, turn on that microphone over there. Good morning, Dr. Jeff Shepard.
Good morning, Jeff.
There he is.
You do exist. You are there. See, this is live radio. You always have fun with live radio. But what you do is the border studies. Explain that to us. Is that the title? What is your title as a professor of what?
Well, first I want to thank everybody for allowing us to take up some time here. Well, thank you, Jackson. Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you.
I also want to thank Dr. Brad Cartwright, for coming out to talk about Texas history and History Day. I've been there at UTEP in the history department for 16 years, tried to always participate in History Day. It's a wonderful program.
We just figured out that we can help it by promoting it into the community. And that's kind of what today was, because History Day that we're referring to was actually in February. and, and the February History Day that we're talking about has the theme this year that he mentioned. But each year you guys do that, and you're a volunteer into that as well.
Yeah, almost everybody, all the faculty, most of the grad students, we even get some undergrads to volunteer to help out, obviously the school teachers. And it's grown since I started 2002. Dr. Charles Martin and Nicole Etchison, Dr. Etchison, has moved to a different university. And it's grown from, you know, a couple dozen people to 900 participants, maybe. I don't know. A whole lot of people, sure.
It's a big thing for high school students to become exposed to history on various levels, but also how to do it, how to research.
Right.
Is that part of what you teach?
Yes. Well, so I am in the history department, and the history department has a PhD program, and it focuses on the history of the U.S.-Mexico border. And kind of goes out into couple different areas of northern Mexico, the southwest, up into California. So it has a fairly large regional scope.
And what do you – give me some specifics about a course. What would be an opening course for a grad student on this?
Well, we have a couple different types of courses. We have research courses. We have courses that are called literature and methods, where we talk about historiography. One of the things that makes history so exciting is that historians, we argue about things. We have different sources, we have different interpretations, and somebody says this is a cause and effect, somebody else says this is a cause and effect for an event. And so, you know, we have a lot of classes that focus on how historians debate and argue about the past. And then we have research classes where students are responsible for doing their own individual research projects, and hopefully those contribute to their dissertation. So all the doctoral students, they have to do a dissertation.
Also, you go down a research path, and you'll find maybe two newspaper reports of the same incident, and they're different.
Oh, sure.
And then what do you do?
Exactly. That's fascinating. We look at the news. Students look at newspapers. They look at government documents. Oh, they look at personal memoirs and journals. I mean, my personal research area is in the U.S. West and Native American history. And so, for instance, I've looked at all kinds of personal journals from people coming over west on the Overland Trail. Interviews with Native people. So you get all kinds of different perspectives and arguments in history. And that's what, to me, it makes it so fascinating and such a vibrant field of study.
Do you ever change anybody's mind by saying, oh, we found more research and this now is fact and that's not?
Sometimes. But, you know, sometimes people, they hold dearly their own interpretations on things.
They just know better in their heart.
Right.
You were wrong. Yeah, whatever. But tell us about this courses that you teach. Why should people get involved? What are they?
Well, we have colonial Mexico. We have modern Mexico courses. We have courses that look at the progressive era on both sides of the border. Actually, there was a similar set of concerns and issues in Juarez, for instance, and border cities on both sides regarding industrialization, the impact of immigration and urbanization to cities, social reform. You know, we look at the impact of things like prohibition on El Paso and on Juarez. So there's all kinds of things that we look at. And students, they pick their own topics with a dissertation chair. Okay. They get opportunities for teaching, to teach their own classes and U.S. history classes and sometimes some advanced upper division classes. So it's a really robust, wonderful program, in my opinion.
Did Miguel Juarez just go through your group?
Oh, sure.
He just got his PhD,
yes.
As you know better than I do.
Yes.
We saw it on Facebook.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
And so what
was
he studying?
He was looking at Lincoln Park and the Chicano community, uh-huh, and Mexican-American history, but also questions of urbanization, mm-hmm, and interstate road building. And across the United States, of course, the Eisenhower Interstate Act had a great impact on the United States, changed how we relate to each other, sped things up, increased transportation, but it also moved through cities and towns and, you know, raise questions of urban renewal and revitalization. And so he was looking at that, amongst other things.
Well, just to digress slightly, I hope he wins, because he wants to save Lincoln Park,
right,
the Lincoln School, and turn it into some sort of useful,
right,
public thing.
Right.
It should be done. That's just an aside. So tell me what we need to know about this. I don't really know enough about your discipline to ask the right questions. Explain it to us.
Well, the PhD program, so we take applicants from really all over the world. We've had people from all across the United States. We've had numerous students from Mexico. And so they have to submit applications, statements of purpose, writing samples that they've done a little bit of primary source research to show that they're ready for advanced study.
You don't take this anybody.
Oh, no. No, it's fairly competitive. And this is the case across the United States in PhD programs. And not just anybody also want to engage in very focused research for 5 years, 7 years, or 8 years.
Wow.
So it's a big commitment.
That is.
And that's full time. We also have a number of students that are part time, and they work at the university. One is active duty military. One teaches in the high schools. So we work with all kinds of people as long as they have a good commitment to the profession, as long as they're serious, because it is. It's a big commitment.
And what are they studying now? What are some of these? How many people did you just mention? Is that five people total, six people?
Well, a few. I mean, actually, I joke with Miguel. I call him number 40.
Ah.
Call him 40 because he was the 40th PhD student in our program, which started in 1999. And so we've had a few more, so we're about 43 PhD students that we've graduated.
That's pretty selective, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, presently we have about 35 PhD students in the program, but since 1999, we've graduated about 43 students. And they've gone off to programs all across the United States. Several are faculty in Mexico. They've published books. They're doing wonderful research. But we also have a number of people that are still here in town. We want to cultivate local talent as well. So we have some faculty that are in the university in the entering student program to help students come in to get used to the university, but they're also teaching. They teach in the history department. And then we're also trying to work to reach out much more to the community to build connections with the Historical Society, with the Chamisal, with the museum, trying to work on internships. I, for instance, taught a class where students were tasked with creating their own private historical research firm.
Oh.
Because we have a lot of local talent here, and when we're doing historic preservation, all kinds of different building surveys, who do we hire? Do we hire somebody from town or out of town?
It's usually out of town.
Out of town. So I thought, well, let's try to fix that. Let's get some local capacity here for students that want to stay in town, whether they have a PhD or an MA, that know the area, and to start a business.
Yeah, that would be good.
So that was an interesting exercise. We had some people from historical research firms across the country come in and talk with them. We're working with a business school because historians, we're not necessarily great with finances, perhaps,
books?
Or business. I mean, we're,
accounting.
So how do you,
invoice?
How do you, right? How do you turn a business out of the study of history?
Yeah. Well, there was one question about a paper between Juarez and El Paso. Shelley had held up a sign about a specific paper. Did you talk to her about that ahead of this? A paper on Juarez and El Paso.
I'm not sure about that. I may have.
I misunderstood the question.
May have misunderstood.
But what else should we know about this? I mean, this is, to me, it's fascinating that you're doing PhD work, but that's, you're not focused your whole career on four students at a time.
Oh, no. Again, we have 35 PhD students in the program. We have several that come in every year. They take a particular set of courses. One course that they're all taking is world history. Then we have students take introduction to U.S.-Mexico border history. We call it literature and methods. And then they begin to build their own study. We have some students that focus on U.S. history, so they're ready to apply for jobs in U.S. history, as well as U.S.-Mexico border. We have other students that focus on Latin America. We have a lot of students that are faculty members in Latin American history, and they also teach some U.S.-Mexico border history. But then it delves down into all kinds of different things: civil rights history, progressive era, economics, political history, immigration. So the U.S.-Mexico border history is the centerpiece of the whole department, but we also have students taking classes in various areas to get them prepared for the job market, which the job market is very, very tight for professional historians.
Do you find people coming through the ranks in El Paso and they don't know what happened here?
Oh, of course.
What do you do about that?
Well, one of the things that the history department does is the history department is what's called a service department in the university. And so that means that we teach thousands of undergraduates through the U.S. History Survey courses, because the state of Texas mandates that all college students in public universities take U.S. history. And so, on the one hand, it's not the best teaching scenario to have 240 students. But on the other hand, it's wonderful because we get to teach them one more time before they sort of go off and become, you know, taxpaying citizens, voting citizens, that we can address some of, let's say, some of the gaps in the public school curriculum, which again comes from the state of Texas, and it doesn't necessarily include El Paso.
Well, here at last hour, there's not much being taught in the curriculum of EPISD and other independent school districts in Texas. It's just not there.
Right.
Like we said earlier, we got, I heard about San Jacinto Plaza, not the plaza, the battle, and then Alamo, and then, we're out of time. And that's really the shame, and it should be something where the people get taught.
They should be able to get it all in there somehow.
Oh, my goodness,
yeah.
So that's one goal we have, and we're happy to see hear about history where we can find it. People seem to tune into the radio show sometimes because there's no place else to go. I'll tell you what, we need to take a break here because we'll come back and ask you that. We'll take a break here for trivia. Are you ready for trivia?
Did you
make up?
I got one.
Okay, can you make up a trivia question for us?
I got one question.
Oh, no. Put on the hot seat.
No.
One we just talked about, something. I got one and that's it.
How many graduate students have you had since 1999? Don't say it because you did say it. And you can remember that.
Yes.
And that'll be for a big prize of $25 to Pepe's restaurant. How about that for a question?
I have the other one. Okay.
And you have the other one. Okay, there's one.
And UTEP's Border Studies course offers, this is a yes or no question. Let me try to phrase this one. UTEP's Border Studies course offers undergraduate and graduate courses. Yes or no?
Oh, my God. I know the answer to that. Okay, so
yeah,
that's
a
question.
We have a low-level class
We're
here.
Trying to give this stuff away.
Yeah, it's
the point.
It's piling up on my side of the desk here.
Okay, so what are the questions
The question is, does the UTEP's Border Studies course offer a undergraduate course and a graduate course? Yes or no?
Okay, that's an easy one.
And how many grad students have gone through the program
since 1999. How about those for tough questions? If they want to get some, we got one Pepe's left here for this hour.
We have one Pepe's for $25 up in Canutia. They're wonderful.
And a bunch of DVDs over there.
And we have a bunch of El Paso Gold DVDs, so you can catch up on that history. And they can get these by calling us at 915-544-5876 or 915-544-KTSM.
It was about this time of year, back in 1881, after a trial in Mesilla, that Sheriff Pat Garrett took Billy the Kid to Lincoln, New Mexico, where he was to be hanged until dead. It didn't turn out that way. Billy the Kid escaped and killed both of his guards while Garrett was out of town. And what you've just heard is a snapshot of what came to be known in these parts as the Lincoln County War. This Sunday, we'll be sidling our iron horses and heading to the old Lincoln County Courthouse on the west end of Main Street, where to this day, you can still see a famous bullet hole Billy made during his flight. It's one thing to read about history, but any hog will tell you it's entirely different to experience it in person. To breathe the air, to ride along the gurgling Rio Bonito River, which forms the northern boundary of a town still not marred with gas stations or convenience stores. To experience the reality that became history, click on BarnettHarley.com or get your ride at Barnett Harley Davidson. Because now, just like back in the old West, a man is measured by his mount.
Say, folks, my good friends at Mahindra have an exciting event going on at Mahindra dealers across our great nation. Harvest Demo Days, and right now you can test drive any Mahindra tractor or utility vehicle and take home the biggest savings of the year. That's right. Test drive a Mahindra subcompact, compact, or utility tractor or a Mahindra utility vehicle and save. There's just no substitute for experiencing Mahindra quality and performance for yourself. Now, once you're in that seat, you'll see how easy it is to operate a Mahindra and to become a good steward of the land you love. To learn more about the world's number one selling tractor and Harvest Demo Day savings, or to find your dealer, visit MahindraUSA.com.
Take advantage of rock-bottom prices and test drive a Mahindra today at Goodman Ag in Las Cruces, or visit GoodmanAg.com. That's GoodmanAg.com.
The Westside's newest luxury apartments are now leasing at Las Mansiones, 1776 Cimarron Trails, near North Wrestler Drive and Paseo del Norte, a mile from the new Westside Providence Hospital.
Las Mansiones features three-story units with amazing views. To the east, the majestic Franklin Mountains, and to the west, El Paso's Upper Valley. You'll enjoy sunsets like you've never seen before from your own private balcony. Las Mansiones, 915-704-1776.
Now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show, brought to you by ephistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history, Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant at 6761 Donovan Drive, Sargent Home and Business Inventory Services, providing affordable photographic and digital inventories of your home, office, or collectibles, and by Monterey Asset Management for your real estate investments. And now, here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
All right, here's what's going to happen here next few weeks. Here we got all kinds of people coming in here. September 22nd, next week on the show, we're going to hear about the history of the Camino Real de Tierra Adentro and how that highway was the first one in North America, and it came right through El Paso. And do you know a king put that road through here?
Really?
Yeah. And do you know which king?
No.
Find out next week.
Okay.
Second hour, our topic is Waco Tank State Historic Park next week. And find out how historic it really is, because they date back 10,000 years, if you want to go count them. And what are they doing about it? Oh, they got a ghost tour. Can you imagine that? September 29th, there's an exhibit opening. It's actually opening today. We'll hear about it next on the September 29th. Rations, Rights, and Rivets, Experiencing World War II in El Paso. That's at the Centennial. Hour two that day, we're having John Hamilton on to talk about the book Fort Bliss.
Hey,
today,
you got a hold of him,
signing, yeah, we found him. Today, he's signing those books at the Westside Barnes & Noble. So he'll be in here a couple of weeks to talk about that. Lots of great pictures. UTEP Special Collection Archivist Abby Weiser coming to talk about the Border Archives Bazaar. It's a free event, and the Border Archives people get together, and they show each other documents and stuff, and they'll let you look at them because they're going to bring them on site. October 13th, Mission Trail, Shelby McHugh, and he's going to talk about the Mission Trail, what are they doing now. Hour two, Patricia Kidney. Bernie's going to come in, we think. And that's about Concordia, Mount Cristo Rey on the 20th with the Historical Commission. What's their marker program? October 27th, we meet Vladimir von Sokurov. Yes. Did I say that right?
Yes. Sarkov.
That guy.
Sarkov.
The new
director. Von Sarkov.
That dude. He's coming in on the 27th of October. And hour two that day, Jeff Romney's coming in because they're right now renovating the Archaeology Museum. And Jeff took off on a vacation.
Oh, that's
and
nice.
Do you know where he went? Chaco Canyon. Ooh. He went to Mesa Verde. He went to the monuments area.
That's where you're supposed to go.
Exactly. And I said, you better come in and give us a book report of where you went on your vacation.
Well, he can tell you where to really go, too, up there. It's beautiful.
Well, he's from Casas Grandes, so he likes that kind of stuff. All right, we got Jeff in here, Dr. Okay. Jeff Shepherd. And we're going to talk more about various things. But could you give us an idea of something some of your students have done?
Oh, they've just done some really wonderful projects.
Where'd he go? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay.
There he is.
They've just done some wonderful dissertations. I mean, we talked about one in particular, but one of our students, graduates, Will Guzman, who's a professor, director of African American Studies in a university in Jersey, he did his dissertation and a book on Lawrence Nixon, African American medical doctor and civil rights activist. So his book has come out.
And he was in El Pasoan, that's a point.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. One of our PhD students, graduate Scott Komar, has written a history of the Tigua. So a long, long history of the Tigua. He's worked with them for a while. We have students working on all kinds of different things. Religion in the church and intermarriage in Juarez and El Paso in the 19th century.
Oh, my.
We have a student that looked at the Rio Grande, the IBWC, and the rectification projects and the dams along the U.S.-Mexico border here. So that was a wonderful project.
As minimal as that may sound, it had a huge effect on the way things went along here.
Oh, sure.
Where's the border today?
Sure.
And then we ended up with the Chamizal settlement.
Right.
And that's why the Rio Grande's in concrete down there.
Right. When I first moved, so I grew up in Florida mainly. We get 55, 60 inches a year of rain. We have a river that's 3 miles wide. And so I heard about the Rio Grande, and I was like, okay, this is
I want
a
to
great
see
river.
That. Oh,
and so I had very little idea about Elephant Butte and the damming process and how they release the water. Now I know much more. I live in Las Cruces. I work with community members there and farmers, and then I came down to El Paso, and I was like, where's the river? It's a big concrete culvert.
Yeah.
So we have students that also help try to explain present-day situations. So where does the water come from? Do we know that most of the water that goes into the lower Rio Grande Valley comes to the Rio Conchos?
But not from America. It comes from Mexico.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
That's weird to learn, isn't it?
Right. And so water issues like that are hugely important. Debating who gets the water, how much water do we divide between cities and municipalities, and from an international perspective, we have international water treaties.
Have you gotten into the stuff about how Texas got New Mexico's water before they were a state?
Oh, sure.
Oh, my. They're still upset.
Oh, sure. I mean, the Pecos River, some people say it's not much of a river, but it's been highly contested. Highly contested. And I think that there's still a court case ongoing.
Probably.
I think they've settled.
Water.
They might have just settled that?
Yeah.
Okay.
But New Mexico was not happy, and I kind of don't blame
No.
But the point is that what rains on New Mexico, we own it apparently or something.
Right. Well, what's the phrase? Poor New Mexico, so far from God, so close to Texas. No offense to Texas. Well, I love Texas. My employer. I love it here.
Let's just sum it up by saying bless their hearts. Okay,
right.
Move on.
Oh,
hey, I like it here. I'm from California. I like this state. I'm going to stay here. I'm not going back to California.
Well, after I've seen California burning and North Carolina drowning, I think right in the middle here, I'm going to stay right here. Well, doctor, hold your thought there because you have more projects that students have done. We'll come back in a minute. We're going to take one more break here and then come back for a longer segment. But as we do that, nobody called trivia, so we're going to eat the Pepe's food.
Yes, I thought you were going to challenge the audience question.
Let's do that. Just do that.
Okay, so somebody out there has to give us a trivia question for a chance at $25 in food at Pepe's in Canutillo. Or an El Paso Gold DVD, of which we have a lovely selection.
Ask us a question that's relevant to our show this morning.
That's right. It has to be relevant to this section of the show.
Well, it would be nice. Otherwise, if it's a good question, we'll probably take it.
They'll have to stay after school.
But they have to call us to deal with this.
Oh, that's right. Call us at 915-544-5876 or 915-544-KTSM.
Go to ephistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history and for podcasts of our weekly radio show and for a list of area stores that carry our DVDs like El Paso's Waco Tanks, Mexican Revolution sites in El Paso, and Legends of El Paso's Mountains. 18 titles in all, plus links to dozens of TV stories about El Paso area history. Go to ephistory.com for a journey into El Paso's amazing history. EPHistory.com.
Message and data rates may apply. Individual results may vary. See website for details.
But hey, I'm buying a huge flat screen TV so I can finally see it without my glasses.
Why not just get LASIK at the LASIK Vision Institute? That's what I'm doing.
My glasses and contacts are a pain. I'd love to finally get rid of these, but who can afford LASIK?
You can. Because the LASIK Vision Institute is offering dramatically low prices and an absolutely free consultation. Just text WISH to 350-350. The LASIK Vision Institute has already performed over a million procedures. They use the latest FDA-approved LASIK technology that helps the majority of patients achieve 20/20 vision for a fraction of what others charge. Better vision, better value. The LASIK Vision Institute. Make this the year you finally get LASIK. For a free consultation plus an extra 20% discount on LASIK packages, text WISH to 350-350. You'll see for free if LASIK is right for you. That's WISH to 350-350.
Attention, Red Rock Travel is giving out 5 days in a luxurious resort in Orlando for four with shuttle and tickets to a theme park for only $299. But you must tell me the name of a country without the letter A in its name. You know it? A country that does not have the letter A in its name, and you go with your family to Disney with tickets to a theme park. Call now, 1-888-470-5797. 1-888-470-5797. You'll get 5 days in the magical world of Orlando with free shuttle and tickets to a theme park only for the first 20 callers. Tell me a country without the letter A in its name. 1-888-470-5797. 1-888-470-5797. Now, if you're one of the first 20 callers, we'll add a second bonus destination to Las Vegas, Nevada for the same $299. Call now and tell me a country without the letter A in its name. 1-888-470-5797. 1-888-470-5797. That's 1-888-470-5797. Red Rock Travel Group, where family matters. Certain restrictions apply. Must be 21 to participate.
Now
let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show, brought to you by EPHistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history, Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant at 6761 Donovan Drive, Sargent Home and Business Inventory Services, providing affordable photographic and digital inventories of your home, office, or collectibles, and by Monterey Asset Management for your real estate investments. And now, here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
Okay, we challenge people to give us a question. Let's see what happens here. We'll give away the stuff if it's worthy. Bobby, got you on the phone here. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you?
Fine.
We're good. We're good. You're going to play the game with us? You're going to ask us a question?
I'm going to ask you the questions, and I'm also going to join you for lunch.
Oh, good.
Well, good.
Out of Pepe's today. Good.
Yeah. I'll miss you today, but...
And we had the special. What was it? Oh, was it chili... Green chili enchilada.
And that's my favorite.
Oh, they're very good. So what's your question for us?
Okay, what UTEP professor wrote a book in the early 90s about the border? And he's from UTEP.
My goodness. Jeff, do you have any idea?
May I answer that?
Yeah, please. Oh. Jeff Shepard, doctor, PhD dude.
W.H. Timmons.
I'm sorry?
W.H. Timmons, you wrote a book called El Paso, A Borderlands History.
No. Oh. You want me to tell you?
Yeah, tell us the answer. Yeah, we don't know.
The reason I know this is because I helped transcribe the tapes that he was doing to interview people from El Paso and Juarez.
And then, and what's the name of the book? What's the name of the professor?
The professor, Pablo Vila.
Pablo Villa? Vila?
Vila.
Vila.
Now, how do we corroborate your information? Because we're sitting here with blank looks.
Definitely Pablo Vila. He's a well-known, an extremely well-known border studies scholar.
You win. Okay.
So
yay.
Is that a yay?
Yes.
Yay.
You win. Now, if you go to Pepe's today, I can't bring you the certificate today.
I know that.
You know the drill. So, but you want the Pepe's? You want a DVD? What you want?
I want the Pepe's because I don't have a DVD player.
Fair enough.
Oh, okay.
Okay. It doesn't work on your computer anymore?
You know what? I can play a DVD on my computer.
What would you like?
Yay. So you mentioned something about the ghosts
in Santa Lazaria. You want that one?
I would love it.
Okay, I tell you, the ghost of Santa Lazaria was weird because it's ghost two. And what we did was we basically said we ran out of history. We looked everywhere. The records burned in Santa Lazaria. What do you do then? I took a psychic down there. I said, what happened? And she gave me a story that we thought was credible, so we put it in a video. And we call it a ghost story. You take it or leave it as history, but she's credible. Mm-hmm. So, okay, there you go. So, Bobby, you got that today. And, again, you'll have to pick that up. But they'll tell you how to pick that up on the phone. Anything else on your mind this morning?
No, only that, it's sad to hear that the Rio Grande is so not real grande anymore.
Yeah.
Because when I was a kid, I lived like a few hundred yards away.
Yeah.
And it was flowing, and it was brimming, and it was dangerous to swim through.
Yeah.
Still is. summertime.
it still does that once or twice in a spring, but not all the time like it once. In fact, it never really ran all the time. Because it was runoff from Colorado coming down through New Mexico, and that happened huge in like April and May.
It ran all year. It did run all year, but it would fluctuate. But then again, it's probably a good thing it's somewhat controlled, because then your house would probably have been gone several times during the springs.
If you actually lived that close to the Rio Grande before Elephant Butte Dam, you would not have your house much anymore after one of the two of those. Because that used to wipe out downtown El Paso. There's pictures of downtown El Paso under 3-4 feet of water. And it had nothing to do with rain here. It was runoff from Colorado. So.
All the area was bosky.
And that's why,
yellow fever.
The thing ran all the way over there where the Washington, the Coliseum is. It ranged all over the valley because it could. Mm-hmm. So because, it got messy, people didn't want to do that anymore. They fenced it in. So, all right, Bobby, you got yourself a DVD. Shelley will come on and tell you how to pick it up, and I'll see you for lunch out at Pepe's.
Okay.
Hold on.
That's great.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening.
Got a winner there, and away we go. So, what do we need to do now? Are you ready? Are you ready?
Yeah.
Are you ready?
I'm ready this week.
This week, only in El Paso, Inc.
Low and Slow, Lincoln Park celebrates Chicano art and lowriders.
Also in the Inc., why construction has been halted on Texas Tech's El Paso's new $83 million building. It's been halted.
Ford Wadsworth reveals whispers that Alamo Drafthouse Cinema is planning a second location.
El Paso Inc. is El Paso's only locally owned business journal.
To get El Paso Inc. for home and business delivery, go online to elpasoinc.com.
On ABC 7 Extra Sunday night at 10:35, the topic is the Mexican-American Cultural Center. Ben Fife, Assistant Director of Museums and Cultural Affairs, and Cassandra Hernandez, City Rep, will represent the city. That sounds interesting. You think she can do that? It's her title. Lily Limon, former District 7 City Rep, will be there to represent, quote, the other side. She helped organize Thursday's protest when the city unveiled a proposal to build the Mexican-American Cultural Center in the downtown library.
Mauricio Casillas will host ABC 7 Extra this Sunday night at 10:35 p.m. after the news.
You're happy with yourself for saying that, aren't you?
I'm sorry. I mean, it is going to be a referee.
Well, you said what happened. Bernie went there last night.
Yeah, he was there watching this.
Thursday night.
And it was on the news. I mean, it was quite
riotous.
Oh,
no, it was noisy.
What does the city expect? They go there for input, but they didn't have one. The conversation
on ABC 7 Extra is the city wants to put the Cultural Center for the Mexican-American people into the library, and the library people don't want it there.
The library's a library.
The cultural people don't want it there.
No. They should put it at La Hacienda Restaurant. That's where it belongs. They could get a great deal for that property from Chip.
They could have
the two historic properties next door where they could hold classes. That's where it belongs. That's where it belongs. It does not belong in the library.
Well, we'll see how that turns out.
Did I say that out loud?
Don't say too much out loud. Just keep some of that to yourself. But ABC 7 Extra, that's what they got going on.
I'm going to get yelled at.
Jeff is still here. And Jeff Shepard, Dr. Jeff Shepard, what do you think of these kind of controversies? I mean, we're talking about our history here.
Border studies.
And you can sort of jam it in the library. I mean, you want to comment on that or not?
On that issue, I think it's a terrible idea.
Yeah.
No, it needs to, wherever it goes, it needs to be a freestanding building.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I think that's a very simple response.
And actually, that's part of the bond of 2012, and where they did it, it had nothing to do with Mexican Americans only. It was an El Paso Cultural Center. Oh, but that's not how the ordinance read. Well, really?
Well, and also, when you think about it, the 2006 bond that was spent for the library was for the library. So now you got another issue of the bond money that was put into the library now is being utilized differently. So now you got another problem there.
That's ABC 7. Good luck with that. As far as the history goes, though, I mean, I'd love to see history preserved and utilized. And what are your thoughts? You had some more students.
Well, in addition to, you know, what we do for training PhD students, the history department has been involved with a lot of these different public policy questions.
Mm-hmm.
When I first got here, there were questions about the status of the Tigua, for instance, in their casino.
Oh.
And, you know, I was involved explaining American Indian law and policy, the relationship with Native people in Texas. A few years after that, the construction of the Oñate statue / equestrian, the history department, with generous support from President Natalicio, allowed us to put together a 3-day symposium to investigate history and the way that we remember and commemorate people in El Paso and in Juarez. And for 3 days, we had over 500, maybe 400 people in attendance at the large auditorium on UTEP's campus. We also put together a museum exhibit that looked at murals and monuments in El Paso and Juarez. During the Mexican Revolution centennial in 2010, the history department worked with the library, with delegates from Mexico, to put together a wonderful museum exhibit commemorating El Paso's participation and Juarez's participation in the Mexican Revolution. So we've always tried to participate in these things because history doesn't exist in a vacuum. Historians don't do things in a vacuum. There's a sense that historians are sitting in dusty archives working alone, when in fact we're deeply engaged with contemporary discussions. So many historians have written on various sides of the issue. I have a particular view on this regarding immigration today. Many of the path-breaking historians today have written op-ed pieces. They've talked to their city council members about the history of immigration. But we've been involved with all kinds of stuff. Right now, for instance, the history department and other faculty at UTEP were working with Jamie Nodler at the museum.
No history.
On a history series, learning from the past, looking mm-hmm. to the future, tying contemporary discussions with the past and getting a little historical perspective.
We promoted that on the show here.
Right.
Yeah,
so we're working with her on that. We work with Ollie, the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute.
Right.
We're doing a class through Ollie this semester, and we decided to have six different people teach a class on Borderlands history, and that's two doctoral students that are teaching. One is Angelina Martinez, and she's looking at education in El Paso history, and another student is Ian Lee. He's a doctoral student, and he's looking at civilian, Native, and Mexican, Anglo-Mexican, and Native relations in southern New Mexico in the 19th century. So we've always been involved with these issues, how we commemorate history, how we talk about history, how it's used and sometimes misused. And it's important. It's an obligation that historians have to engage the public and be involved.
And you run right into politics on a regular basis.
Oh, of course.
At the Oñate statue.
Oh, sure.
The mayor of El Paso told me at the time that it would not be put up if it had named the name Oñate on it. So the city council decided that was no longer the Oñate monument, even though the artist said that's what he built. Even though the foundation to put up the money said that's what they built, he called it the equestrian to get it built.
Right.
What about that? I mean, is that political compromise, or do you just tell the whole story and say this is what happened? It's about what you can do, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Because,
sure.
I mean, was there any reason to go back and change the monument's name? I mean, you'd probably have the same fight going the other way, wouldn't you? Oh, well.
Definitely. Yeah, we also work with the Chamisal. We work with the Chamisal National Monument. We're working on a MOU with them to improve relations with them, help
memo
them.
Memo of understanding.
Oh, I'm sorry. Memo of understanding. Sorry. Apologize.
I thought I meant MUFON.
Right.
It wasn't MUFON. No.
Right.
That's something else.
Right. And I myself, I've worked with the National Park Service on a number of jobs, finishing up a book on the Guadalupe Mountains National Park.
Really?
For instance.
Have you been at the top of that?
Oh, sure.
Oh, sure. You got good legs. You can do this.
It's what we called field work.
Are you kidding? That's an 8-hour hike.
Field work.
Oh, my goodness. I looked at it. I never did it. I went up Devil's Canyon instead that day. That's easier.
Right.
A lot easier. So you've been atop of Guadalupe Mountain.
Oh, sure.
Did you sign your name in that little book?
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Oh, my God. What's it like up there?
Oh, it's beautiful. It's amazing. I mean, you're in the Chihuahuan Desert all around, and then you go up 8,790 feet, the highest point in Texas,
wow,
more or less, a few feet. And you're up in more or less a pine woodlands. I mean, if you think about Cloudcroft, Redoso. Mm-hmm.
It comes down that far.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
See, we say Texas is the highest, El Paso is the highest city.
Right.
And it really is. And so the highest point, oh my goodness. So you wrote a book on that?
Sure.
What's there to write? What do you write about?
Oh, well, it was a contract from the National Park Service, and they wanted me to start with geological history all the way up to the founding of the park in 1966.
Wow.
And so I looked at geology, anthropology, archaeology, the Spanish indigenous populations, westward migrants, U.S. military, Buffalo Soldiers, Apaches, all the way up to – it was an environmental history as a history of the Guadalupe Mountains area. It wasn't solely focused on the mountain.
Wasn't there somebody living in a ranch or a ranch house on the side of that mountain?
Oh, sure. On the west side,
yeah.
there was this old settler, Dolph Williams.
That's the one.
Adolphus Dolph Williams.
What was that all about? How did he survive doing that?
They were pretty creative back then. And the main challenge, obviously, if you've been to the west side of the Guadalupe Mountains, really any west side of a mountain here in the southwest, it's blistering heat.
Yeah.
And so they had created a system of pipes to bring water down from springs. And so some of that was used for the cattle, and they had some sheep grazing.
Oh, okay.
And then later on, a guy named J.C. Hunter bought up a lot of the land. He was a rancher from Abilene, and he bought up a lot of the land. And then also an oil patrolman, he also bought up the land. He was one of the first petroleum geologists professionally trained for an oil company, Wallace Pratt. And he eventually became one of the leading people in Humboldt Oil. So those two guys at one point, about 1960, they owned about 75,000 acres of what became the park. And the park eventually is about 86,000 acres, including the salt flats, which is also the site of the salt wars.
It is included.
Oh, sure.
Oh, okay. So what's it look like up there, a big flat thing of salt, like from an airplane, I guess?
Oh, it's very beautiful. I mean, it's glistening. It shines brightly back at you. If there's water there,
oh yeah,
it's even more fascinating.
It's absolutely fascinating when there's filled with water.
Oh sure, but when you drive out there, I mean, essentially, if you go Montana and then keep going and going past Waco Tanks, and you go over a little set of mountains, and then you keep on going. There's no cell service, which is actually very nice.
That's nice. Nobody's bothering
to get away from some of the cell service. But then you start to think, wow, people were coming up from San Elizario for the salt.
Yeah.
It's a long way to go.
Bizarre. That's a long trek.
Just amazing.
A long trek to get that. And then they had wars over it, as we know.
Oh, sure.
In San Elizario, they killed people. Hard got some Rangers killed. It's an interesting world here that we have. Then shouldn't that be made into a movie? The Salt War.
Oh, sure. And in fact, since you brought that up, one of our doctoral students, Tim Nelson, he wrote his dissertation on Blackdom.
Blackdom?
Blackdom, which is a small autonomous African-American community outside of Roswell, New Mexico. And it was part of the African-American, the Exodusters, people who left the South during Jim Crow and moved west. And so they established their own community. And after some financial difficulties, racism, people dispersed. And a lot of those folks moved down to Vado, New Mexico.
That's what I heard about, this community there.
Right. And so he is working on a movie. And he is in some conversations with some of the Netflix-type people for a serial, for like a series. So he's really moving forward the way in which we present history, beyond history books and trying to get, you know, movies and documentaries and things like that.
Get him to do the Salt War.
That'd be great.
Wouldn't it be fascinating?
I mean, think it'd be great to have on the show.
Yeah. If he's available, let us know.
Tim Nelson, we'll give him a call.
Knock, knock, Tim. Hey,
us. We'll get his number from you. Yeah.
Fair enough. Okay, there's a lot going on here. We're going to talk more about it in a minute here and see what else you can do about it. We're going to take a break here. And shall we just, you put him on, people on Facebook already?
I'm getting there now.
Cool.
I've been tapping away here. I've been working
on it. Otherwise, they can call us in the last segment.
I got to cut and edit and get him up there.
If they need to, the number would be
915-544-5876 or 915-544-KTSM.
Right now at Sprint, get the new Samsung Galaxy Note 9 on a network that's built for unlimited. It's the fastest Note ever and perfect for gaming. Take your Fortnite skills to a whole new level with the new Galaxy Note 9 on the Sprint network. Visit Sprint.com/Samsung. Restrictions apply.
Let me ask you a question. How long has it been since you've updated your home or business list of assets or property inventory? In the case of a loss by fire, theft, or natural disaster, the insurance company and police will ask for detailed descriptions and often require pictures as proof of ownership. If you can't remember, you can't recover. Contact Sargent Home and Business Inventory Services. Our process provides detailed documentation of what you own. There is no price tag on peace of mind. Call 915-581-7099.
Do you have a love-hate relationship with your credit card? You love the freedom and convenience the credit card gives you, but you hate the high interest rates? And let's face it, they're high. 17, 18, even 20% APR? That's pretty outrageous. But with Lightstream's credit card consolidation loan, rather than throwing your money away on high interest payments, you can get a much lower rate, as low as 5.89% APR with AutoPay. And today, if you want an even lower rate, apply at lightstream.com/talk for a special discount. Plus, with Lightstream, your rate is fixed, so as rates continue to rise, your rates won't budge. They'll stay low. You can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000, which means you can pay off your credit card and start paying an interest rate you can really love, thanks to Lightstream.
Ready to start saving? Apply now at lightstream.com/talk. That's right. Get your extra discount by applying today at lightstream.com/talk. That's lightstream.com/talk.
Subject to credit approval. Rate includes 0.5% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/talk for more information.
Now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show, brought to you by ephistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history, Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant at 6761 Donovan Drive, Sargent Home and Business Inventory Services, providing affordable photographic and digital inventories of your home, office, or collectibles, and by Monterey Asset Management for your real estate investments. And now, here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
All right, we're about out of here, but a couple of things to let you know here. The missing Pattersons is something we've been focusing on my website, ephistory.com. EPHistory.com is where we sell our videos. We talk about the radio. The radio archives are on that site. But also, there's a missing Patterson's page that we cooked up. I went over to the special collections at UTEP and got 163 articles, PDFs, each article, each page, actually, of the old Herald Post. And each of the articles was about the missing Pattersons.
We should find them.
Well, I kind of know where they are, but it's I need a jackhammer and somebody else's house torn down. But the guy who's helping me with that is Paul Whitler, and he has a graphic design company. And I gave him all the PDFs, and he's just now posting them for me as a favor. So I thought I'd announce his name as a favor. But Paul Whitler Graphic Design, he is also an expert on WordPress. And those are hard to find.
Oh, tell me.
He took my page and turned it into something real. So get a hold of Paul Whitler Graphics. He's on Facebook or 581-7054, 581-7054. It's a worthy thing to get your page working.
That's right.
So be it.
That's done. The Women's Club they're having their fundraiser today and tomorrow, and it's at the clubhouse at 1400 North Mesa, which is at River Mesa Street, and they've got artisans and vendors, and they got some great things. They got Granny's Closet where you can buy some gently used items and some antiques. They've got some great antiques from a estate here in El Paso, and they've got the tea room, and it goes from 11 till 5 o'clock today, and from 4 o'clock tomorrow. I'm sorry. I'll be slaving in the kitchen tomorrow. So, I'll be working hard tomorrow, but come out there and support. It's only $3 to get in the door, but there's some great. Get your early Christmas shopping.
And there's no rumor that there's no truth to rumor they're doing Jello shots over there.
No, well, they might be in the kitchen.
No, they're not. That would be you.
Hey, nobody can come in the kitchen but me, okay?
Okay, so maybe that.
Hey, got to keep Women's the cooks
Club.
Happy.
Good, and they're good people. And also, if you don't know the history of the Women's Club, you do not understand El Paso's
those
history.
Those women did a lot.
It's amazing what they got into.
I'm very proud to belong to the organization.
Well, it's a good crowd. We did that video for them. It's still giving, as we say. All right, Jeff Shepard's here. We got stuff to talk about briefly. And then if somebody want to get involved in your program, they should already know about you through schools now. I mean, this isn't something we can turn on a brand new student to, is it? They'd already have to know about you?
Oh, I mean, you know, all of the information for applying to the graduate programs is on our website. We, you know, accept people that we have a deadline of about January 15th for applications to start that, you know, calendar year. The groups of people we let in are about 4 or 5 students per semester. We want to keep it small so that they have a good relationship, one-to-one relationship with their faculty, have smaller classes so that we can work with them closely on tailoring their studies to what they want to do.
Throw in the phone number out to 747-something.
747-6805.
Would you come speak to an organization?
Sure.
Okay.
And sure. High schools and teachers that want to know what you're doing?
Or Rotary?
Oh, definitely.
Or Rotary or any of those? Because I always looking for speakers.
I mean, one of the big things that we also do, and which is tied to the outreach, is public history. And that's Dr. Yolanda Leyva, myself, and lots of other folks. We contribute to public history. So we're really trying to get out and see what community members, organizations need in terms of historical analysis, photographs. I was, you know, really excited about some of the building renovations that are going on downtown, and some of the things that people are digging up, some of the historical architecture, the photographs, and it just seems like a wonderful opportunity to contribute to the community.
Keep up the good work, Dr. Jeff Shepard. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you so much for coming
in. And we're gone next week. We'll come back.
We are?
Yeah, we're gone for now.
That's right.
thank you, Control Room, once again. Everybody else, EPHistory.com for details and radio podcast.
That's right.
And see you next week.
Facebook, Pastor History Radio Show on Facebook.
There we are. Next week. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the El Paso History Show. We hope you'll join us again next Saturday morning, 10 to noon. And be sure to tell a friend about us. Brought to you by EPHistory.com, the website for archive podcasts of this radio show and DVDs about El Paso history and heritage. EPHistory.com. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant and Cantina, making the old Griggs recipes in a new location, 6761 Donovan Drive. Sargent Home and Business Inventory Services, providing affordable photographic and digital inventories of your home, office, or collectibles. Call 915-581-7099. And by Monterey Asset Management for your real estate investments. Thank you for joining us from the studios of News Radio 690 KTSM AM, El Paso.